yourself some children. They all be running wild. Driving you crazy. They're keeping you up all night long. You better turn on your radio, dial up the John Roland Show, because I said so.
Welcome to Because I Said So, the only podcast on the entire World Wide Web where you will hear the truth about psychology, the mental health professions in general, America's mental health industry scam, children, and child rearing. I'm your host, John Rosemond. I'm having fun, and I hope you are as well. The November 3rd issue of the Wall Street Journal, which magically appears on my iPad every morning except Sundays, contained an article about employees in their most exalted 20s and 30s who are refusing to come back to the office because of mental health issues like depression, anxiety, and PTSD. To be precise, these are people who are claiming to be depressed, anxious, and traumatized. I demand to be allowed to work from home because I'm sad, is the latest in the ongoing drama that is young adulthood in America these days, adding fuel to my fire. I read an article this morning about 20 and 30-something year olds who are being treated with drugs and talk therapy for, believe it or not, anxiety over climate change. 20 and 30-something year olds who are being treated with drugs and talk therapy for anxiety over climate change. Hello? Anxiety over climate change? What? Like they're afraid they're going to wake up one morning to discover their beds are floating in 10 feet of seawater and they don't know how to swim? I mean, if you can't already tell, I have absolutely zero sympathy for these people. Folks, let me be the first to break the bad news. America is beset by a generation of young people who think their personal soap operas are sufficient reason to claim entitlement. You've heard about the zombie apocalypse? Well, that's never going to happen, but the woozy apocalypse is already upon us, and believe me, it's worse than the zombies. So, these snowflake wussies don't want to go to work in the office because they claim depression and anxiety and trauma. Mind you, depression is real. Anxiety is real. Trauma? I don't know about trauma. I mean, over the past several decades, the definition of trauma has been dumbed down to the point where stubbing one's toe is a trauma. So I'm not so sure about trauma, but depression and anxiety? Yeah, they're real. The Bible even contains references to them. The question is, does being depressed or anxious constitute a reason not to take a shower, put on decent clothing, and go into the office like you were hired to do? I'm a baby boomer, age 75 as I speak, 76 in a couple of weeks, November the 25th to be exact. And yes, I do accept lavish gifts from strangers. Anyway, as an adult, I've been depressed. I still went to work, put on a fake smiley face, and did what my employer expected me to do. I've also experienced periods when I grappled with an inexplicable sense of dread, of impending doom. It was like not fully waking up from a nightmare. When I was in one of those periods, I still went to work and, to the best of my ability, did what my employer had hired me to do. During those difficult times, I forced myself to function. I didn't draw attention to myself. In fact, I purposefully tried not to draw attention to myself. I really didn't want to deal with some tender soul asking me, is something wrong? I was having a private experience and I wanted it to stay private. I began public speaking in the early 1980s. About 10 years into my public speaking career, I began having occasional spontaneous panic attacks in front of audiences of people who had paid money to hear me talk. I mean, I'd be talking to an audience of maybe 500 people, and suddenly, with no warning of any sort, my brain would freeze, my body would freeze, and all I could think of was getting out of there as quickly as possible. But I was in front of whatever audience because a church or a school or a hospital or some organization had paid me to be there. And besides my fee, they'd spent lots of money on promotion, they'd paid for a venue, they'd worked hard to ensure that the event was a success. And so, when I had one of these panic attacks, I simply paused, took a sip of water, said a silent prayer, and marched on. To my knowledge, no one ever knew I was having difficulty even taking a breath. Like I said, I have no sympathy for these young snowflakes. I've come to the conclusion that young people in America today, not all of them, and maybe not even a majority of them, but absolutely too many of them, have absolutely no regard for anyone or anything but themselves. They're a bunch of self-centered wannabe aristocrats who've been told in their homes and in their classrooms that they're special, and they want to be treated as if they really are special when they're really not. In fact, no one is special. There are people who do things that are special and even extraordinary, like Bill Gates and Elon Musk. But despite the special things they've done, people like Bill Gates and Elon Musk aren't special. Bill and Elon are no different from you and me. They need to take a shower at least once a day or they smell bad. They need to brush their teeth or their breath stinks. They need to go potty. They're not special. But many of today's young people think they personally are special. That there's some mystical aura of specialness surrounding them or something. Well, they're deluded. In psychology, it's called a delusion of grandeur. And delusions of grandeur are typical of people who are psychotic. Am I saying that many of today's young people are psychotic? No. But I am saying they seem incapable of rational self-assessment, of putting anything into a proper perspective. For Pete's sake, we're talking here about young adults who are triggered from merely being told to read Huckleberry Finn, which I, by the way, think is the great American novel. In the late 1960s, the book I'm Okay, You're Okay by psychiatrist Thomas Anthony Harris became an instant bestseller. The title, I'm okay, you're okay, said it all. Everybody's okay. Well, that just ain't true, people. Everybody is not okay. Some people are jerks. Some people are certifiable idiots. Some people are sociopaths. Some people are malicious. People in question, the jerks, the sociopaths, the idiots, and the malicious types, they have no love for their neighbors at all. There's plenty of people like that, by the way. So, wrong. Not everyone is okay. Some people are in desperate need of a major altitude adjustment. The idea that everybody is just fine the way they are and that any obnoxious interpersonal habit should be ignored rather than be subject to kind correction is ridiculous. I've had up close and personal experience with trying to correct a young person's thinking or behavior and being told I'm bullying the person in question, that I should accept everyone for who they are and what they do, even if what they do is offensive. Well, I refuse to do that. And so I've been accused of bullying. A bullying is another word that's been dumbed down since the 1960s. Today, bullying is politely disagreeing with someone under the age of 40. Case in point, a few years ago, my wife and I were at dinner with another couple who brought their 20-something-year-old daughter along with them. Why they brought her along is beyond me, but that they did. During the meal, she, the daughter, launched into a diatribe against environmental polluters. And in the course of her rant, she said some things that were simply not true. So I said in a conversational voice, well, actually, a fairly convincing body of scientific research has found that. And I basically told her in a non-confrontational way that she was mistaken. But I didn't say, you're mistaken. I simply said, well, here are the facts. Have you noticed that lots of people, especially young people, hate facts? Anyway, said 20-something-year-old looked at me as if I'd just told her she was as ugly as sin, which she definitely wasn't. Her eyes narrowed, her jaw clenched, and she said, you know what? You're just a bully, that's what. That's a snapshot of today's young people. Again, not all of them, but all too many of them. They have no intellectual honesty whatsoever. They think their flatulence smells like a field of French lavender. They suffer delusions of specialness, where they expect a person in his 70s to agree with anything and everything they say, and if the 70-year-old doesn't cooperate in that fantasy, then it's not their thinking that's wrong. It's the 70-year-old. He's a bully. Today, someone ought to write a book titled, I'm Not Special and Neither Are You. There's an idea. I may write that book myself. Make a note to myself. So, these young adult employees are using psychological states as excuses for not returning to the office, for wanting to work at home. One of the problems with this is that psychological states can't be objectively verified. Physical disorders can be verified. Psychological states, not so much. If someone says they can't return to the office because they have a chronic autoimmune disorder that might be triggered by breathing air that 50 other people are also breathing, well, that can be verified. But claims of being depressed or anxious or traumatized cannot be verified. There's no medical test for depression, anxiety, or trauma. How does a person receive, then, a diagnosis of, say, depression? Well, he tells a psychologist that he's depressed. That's how. And so it is with every psychological diagnosis. The diagnosis is made on the basis of the person's self-report, which cannot be objectively verified. And so, the snowflakes in question claim what can't be verified. They're depressed. They're anxious. They suffer from PTSD. None of that can be objectively ascertained. Those sorts of issues are diagnosed not by medical tests, but strictly on the basis of the individual's verbal report. Isn't that interesting? Some of them, maybe most of them, have gone to a psychiatrist or a psychologist and told the shrink, I'm depressed. And on that basis alone, the mental health charlatan gives them a diagnosis and writes them a letter saying they're depressed and should be allowed to work from home because coming into the office might trigger their depression. Oh, the shrink may give the person a questionnaire, but we're still talking about self-report. And this is the problem with mental health complaints. Imagine that a person walks into an oncologist's office and the oncologist asks, "Why are you here?" And the person says, "I'm here because I have cancer in my liver." And the oncologist, on that basis of alone, without giving any tests, but simply on the basis of the person's statement, diagnoses liver cancer, prescribes medication, and writes the person a letter saying he's got liver cancer and should be allowed to work from home. Well, that's not going to happen, right? No, it's not. A person doesn't have a bona fide physical illness because he says he has an illness. He has an illness because a battery of scientific tests, blood tests, body scans, biopsies, blood pressure tests, and so on, says he has an illness. My point, folks, is that I think some of the young people in question, maybe most of them, are making up their mental health problems. For whatever reasons, having to do with their delusions of specialness, they simply don't want to go into an office. They want to stay in their pajamas all day and, quote, work, end quote, from the comfort of their bedrooms. If they work at all, they think a weekly paycheck is an entitlement. So here's what I'd do if I was an employer today and one of these slackers came to me with a letter from a psychiatrist saying he was depressed or whatever and should be allowed to work from home. I'd ask the slackard, "So, did your psychiatrist say you have a biochemical imbalance?" And of course, that's what the psychiatrist said, because that's the standard psychiatric narrative. It's psychiatric boilerplate. And the slackard would say, "Well, yeah, you said I have elevated serotonin levels." And at that point, I'd say, "Oh, he did he? So, I'll tell you what. You bring a scientifically obtained analysis of your biochemistry to me showing, in a graph, maybe your serotonin levels are inflated, and you can work from home." The fact, you see, as I've said before in this podcast, the notion that certain people have biochemical imbalances is a fiction. Yes, a fiction. As one very well-known psychiatrist has said, to the horror of his colleagues, I'm sure, the term biochemical imbalance is, quote, this is from a very well-known psychiatrist, the term biochemical imbalance is, quote, these are his exact words, nothing but a useful metaphor, end quote. In other words, no one has ever proven that a biochemical imbalance exists. No one has ever measured one, quantified one. It's a term that sounds very scientific, and it's a perfect fit with the idea that people with emotional issues are off balance. Like the person is off balance because the chemicals in his brain are off balance. But in reality, it's a lie. It's a lie designed by the mental health industry and big pharma to sell drugs. And the further lie is that the drugs in question, whatever they are, have never reliably outperformed placebos in controlled clinical trials. Doesn't that blow your mind? That's fact. They're fake drugs befitting fake diagnoses. You see, the problem is not simply with these young slackers who want to work in their pajamas. The problem is with the mental health industry as well. Now, before I go into this, I'll say again what I've said many times before in this podcast, and elsewhere as often as I am allowed and can say it, I am a mental health professional. I am a psychologist, licensed by the North Carolina Psychology Board to practice psychology. And let me tell you, the North Carolina Psychology Board rues the day they ever issued me a license. When it comes to my profession and my colleagues, I absolutely know what I'm talking about, and that just rubs them raw. Over the past 50 years, since I came out of graduate school, the mental health professions in America have devolved into a farce. They administer fake tests. They assign fake diagnoses. The explanations they give to justify these diagnoses are fake. They practice fake therapies. They dispense fake drugs. As I've said before in this podcast, America's mental health professions ought to be investigated by states' attorneys general for deceptive business practices and egregious violations of the RICO Act. RICO, R-I-C-O, that stands for Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act. The racketeers are Big Pharma. The corrupt organizations include the American Psychological Association, the American Medical Association, and the American Psychiatric Association. But back to the young people in question. The slackards who don't want to come into the office because coming into the office wouldn't allow them to play video games in their pajamas and claim to be working. Do you think these slackards appreciate that they are privileged to live in the greatest nation ever created? I don't think so. They think the rest of us should feel privileged that they exist, and that feeling sad or anxious justifies irresponsibility. This, I don't want to work from the office, I want to work from the privacy of my home. It's an American tragedy. Let me tell you, it's a sign of what's coming, folks. Believe me, and what's coming isn't going to be pretty. Don't think for a minute that the slackards in question would take up arms to defend our freedoms. They don't even know what freedom is. They think freedom is free stuff. And that's a wrap. You've been listening to yet another provocative episode of Because I Said So with your host, yours truly, Johnny Too Bad Rosemond. Thanks for joining me. I hope you continue to do so. For more information on my mission or ministry, it's both actually, my websites can be found at parentguru.com. and johnrosemond.com. Also, please check out my weekly Substack for more truth. And while you're at it, always remember to keep on rocking in the free world. If we don't rock it, we might not keep it. Thanks, folks. Have a great day.